unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth. And set it in there, even in 100,000 years of chaos. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Amish the Buddha, should the Dharma, should the Sangha. In some recent talks, I've spoken of the great immaculacy, the immaculacy of nothingness, the very profound positive meaning of emptiness or voidness. And I've emphasized the need for the preposition and object, voidness of self, emptiness of self. What was condensed down in Zen to the term no self. It's a well-known fact that two people can perceive the same object in strikingly, remarkably different ways. And that in fact, one person can at different times view the same object in remarkably different ways. Well, emptiness is not an object as such. But the fact of what we mean by emptiness is something that all humans have to deal with. If we contemplate with any realistic, even vaguely realistic approach, the transitory nature of our physical existence, the immensity of the universe and what we can see and think we know of the universe is just a tiny part of it in actual fact. The tininess of our place in it as individual beings and indeed as a planet, the solar system, even in our galaxy, in comparison with the seeming infinity of the cosmos. If we think about how our life is subject to vicissitudes beyond our control, to forces beyond our control. I mean, it only takes a small change in the climate, a storm of a day or two, an illness, and all our seeming security just dissolves away, can do so. If we consider the fact that we all suffer pain, that we are all mortal, that we all grow older, all of these very observable facts, and many more that are, as it were, extensions of these facts. For example, the lifetime not only of individuals, but of whole species and of whole star systems and so on and so forth. We think of the inexorability of changeableness, in other words, the inevitability that sentient beings will experience pain and suffering. It is no wonder that in a cultural climate in which religious faith is often scoffed at or disregarded, and where what often passes for faith is, in fact, dogma, which is not genuine faith, but is just a clinging to more externalized view of things in order to try to hold off that fearful emptiness of existence. When we consider this, all of this, we can see that the concept of emptiness which includes all of this has a an awe-inspiring truth to it. A truth that each of us as a mortal human being has to deal with in our lifetime. If that were all there were to it, there would indeed be good reason to despair. But that is not all there is to it, and this is why we have religion. We don't have religion as a kind of a comforting fiction to provide another kind of drug that can help us resign ourselves to this fearful emptiness of existence. We have religion because the real truth about that emptiness is that it is the immaculacy of emptiness. And it's the real truth of no self is that there is the eternal, unborn and undying reality of the true self. Problematical nature of changeableness and impermanency and of suffering provides a powerful incentive to try to find a true and enduring refuge, one that will not just dissolve away when the storm comes, when the illness comes, when old age comes. Will not just dissolve away in the face of human cruelty and the brute forces of nature, will not just dissolve away when we die, and this is, of course, why we have at the very heart of our religion what are called the three refuges. The refuge of the Buddha, the refuge of the Dharma, the refuge of the Sangha. Usually thought of as the refuge of the historical Buddha, the refuge of the historical Buddhist teaching, and the refuge of those who follow that teaching and attempt to put it into practice. But River Master Jiyu gave us a deeper insight into the nature of these refuges, and an insight that each of us can confirm in our own experience through our own training. She rephrased the refuges of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in this way. I take refuge in the eternal. I take refuge in that which the eternal teaches. I take refuge in those who know the eternal. And this, of course, is what the more widely known form of the three refuges are really pointing us towards. Buddha becomes the Buddha of our own Buddha nature. Where the Dharma becomes the Dharma that flows forth from our own Buddha nature. Where the Sangha becomes, or is understood to be, in its primary and essential meaning, those who are themselves actively taking refuge in, have experience of their own true nature, so that when we truly need human help at the deepest level, the deepest spiritual level, we can take refuge in those who can point us to our own heart, to our own unborn and undying refuge. When we come face to face with impermanence and suffering, we can be thrown wildly out of our center. But we can also, because it is a choice we make, we can also turn within, take refuge in pure meditation. Here's the funny thing about that, that the very emptiness, in the sense of the transitory and painful nature of existence, can provide a very great incentive, a very helpful incentive for us to go right into the very heart of what emptiness really is. Go to that meditative place where everything falls away. Everything is stripped away. Where we have nothing, where we cling to nothing, where we know nothing. What I like to call the zero reset. And in that place, with nothing whatsoever, there is indescribable security. Master described it as the fullest nothingness you could ever imagine. A place of infinite acceptance. And where we come to know something of an infinite love. do this truly, we come to know from our own experience, not as theory, not as a comforting platitude, but as a majestic and rock-solid truth of our personal existence, that everything that happens is for my good. Birth and death are nirvana itself. That vast, arid emptiness that can drive people mad is a kindness, not a cruelty. And it can drive us to leaping right into the arms of an infinite love.